A Rough Handshake. Alberto Álvaro Ríos. Nogales, in the earliest years I can remember, had a smell of wood smoke in the evenings. The town itself, which is where I grew up, was separated into two parts, the American and the Mexican, by a 10-foot-high hard wire fence. We lived on the American side, in Arizona, but my father's family had lived on the Mexican side as well. I'm not sure what year the fence was put up, but my family could remember the time before it, and still lived as if it didn't exist. They were not alone. The stretch of land reaching from Guaymas, Mexico, on the Sea of Cortez, to Tucson, Arizona, comprises an ancient region known as the Primeria Alta. It's an old trading route, and people who had families in one part of this region also had relatives in the other parts. The whole region is high desert, more habitable than the farther central parts of either Arizona to the north or Sonora to the south. There are mesquite trees and shrubs everywhere, a variety of desert curiosities and cactuses, barro, ocotillo, saguaro, prickly pear, and rolling hills. It is easy horse country, mostly range with cattle too. Huge cottonwoods signal where the water runs. As you approach Nogales going south from Tucson, having passed from lower desert and saguaros to higher ground, you can come into town on the I-19 freeway now, but you won't see much. The way into town for me, the way I tell people, is the way I remember it. Take the road that turns left. It's longer, but it's where Nogales is. Before you turn off the freeway, 20 miles or so from Nogales, you will have passed several small towns off in the distance to the left. They used to be on the road, but these days they look more like photographs from the car window. There's Tubac, which is an arts colony and has colonial adobe arches announcing itself. The arches are relatively new, several decades, but the town has been old for centuries. Then comes Amado and Tumacacori, with one of Father Kino's missions still strong against the skyline of gentle hills and big cottonwood, and sycamore trees lining the Santa Cruz River. This is the heart of the Santa Cruz Valley, which produces, among other things, its own red chili pepper, whose taste stays with you for life. You can buy some if you go down onto the old road. There's a little shop with a big chile sign. The river is not really a river, so much as the place where a river ought to be. Water runs there part of the year, but you've got to be quick to catch it. The river, for most of its journey, stays well below the sand. That's where the trees find it, somewhere inside the ground and invisible to us. On the one hand, the river that runs through the Santa Cruz Valley winds snake-like and S-shaped through the valley. On the other hand, the freeway, with its single-mindedness, goes through that same valley in a straight line. From the air, I suspect that as they intersect, this must look like so many dollar signs. Just after you get off the freeway on that left turn, however, and finish the old road's wild curve, on the right you pass an innocuous piece of land. It's a little swampy on its far edge, and a good place for birds and frogs. It used to be the El Rancho Drive-In, with a towering white screen, all the rows of speakers, the concession stand, which was more like a small adobe house, and a playground at the back. On some nights, it was our whole world. At exactly 5 minutes before the previews would start, they would put a cartoon clock up on the screen, with a minute and a second hand carefully tracking the time. These last 5 minutes, however, felt nothing like 5 minutes, lasting for what seemed to us hours. This unforgettable clock helped us to understand that nothing was static or absolute in this place, that something like a minute could have many definitions. On the left, you pass by the highway patrol offices and the entry to the old Tucson Road, where I used to ride my bike. There were horses down that road. On that same side, you come across a little limestone curiosity, a small half dome with a statuette inside. This is the monument marker commemorating the passage through here of Fray Marcos de Niza, an explorer and priest. But the statue always looked to us more like a saint. It was only many years later that I found out we were wrong. He was not a saint. No explorer through here was. His presence and passage here was more complex and curiously mirrored in a piece of architecture I remember from growing up and which is still central to both cities. It's not a mission, but rather the biggest and tallest building at the border on the Nogales, Mexico side. The building is called the Fray Marcos, which makes historical sense. At the top of this building, however, was the best-known dance hall and nightclub in town, also referred to as the Fray Marcos. This mix of concepts is furthered when considering the base pun of the Spanish word Fray, which, when used in Fray Marcos, means brother in the religious sense, Brother Marcos. But when considered in its English language usage, a fray, of course, means a quarrel or a fight. Still, for as long as I can remember, people have left votive candles at the small roadside monument, and it's where my neighborhood gang put its treasures for safekeeping, sticking the coins in the crannies of the stone. Of course, after a while, one forgets where these places are, and so we really never knew how much money we had. On the right side was the Flagstone Motel and coffee shop, though all the things I remember are changed or gone. There's a Texaco station now, and insurance companies that sell policies for travel into Mexico. It's a good idea if you're going to drive there. Just past this is Valle Verde, a 50s subdivision we moved to when I was still quite young. This was my geographic life, filled with these houses, which had huge antennas on them in the 50s. Cow fields and cow pounds, the arroyo on the left, the houses and hills on the left beyond that. It was a place to grow up. It was a place where, in the morning and sometimes in the afternoons, you could hear in the distance not the peacocks, but their mates, the peahens, which made a loud and useful watchdog sound when disturbed. This noise would be followed by the cows, which always complained at the loudness of the peahens. The mooing of the cows in turn upset the grasshoppers, which would be startled into their low and desperate flight. This made the rabbits jump up, which startled the peahens, and started the whole thing over. It was a show that could go on all afternoon. Driving forward, you pass by the outskirts of town, newly developed all the way to Mariposa Road. This expanse is filled with all the new stores, the Walmart, the McDonald's, the every town. All the signs here are in English and Spanish, or just Spanish. The stores all run shuttles the 3 miles or so to and from the border for anyone who wants to shop. People from Mexico used to just cross the line and shop at the stores closest to the border crossing, but these new stores are just like Tucson stores. And that means something, even here. They're more American. The signs in Spanish echo something you notice on the drive from Tucson, that all the mileage signs are posted in metric. All the distances you've been reading are kilometers, and so it seems that you get here much faster than you had thought. The feeling is the reverse of how those minutes at the drive-in seemed like hours. Going toward town, just before you reach the curve of the freeway overpass, you drive by Caroon's Mortuary, and then get onto Grand Avenue, which is a name that sounds like it's from the 30s. Optimistically evoking those large and forward-thinking ideas of the time, grand, progress, commerce. Nogales was like that in those days. Going over the hill at the beginning of town, or where the town used to start for as long as I can remember before they annexed north, you pass by Zula's on the left. Zula Burgers. Need I say more? Since the 60s and maybe earlier, they had a secret sauce before there was such a thing. A secret sauce, a size, and a taste in the mouth that made the Grand in Grand Avenue not ring quite so hollow. Of course, hamburgers themselves as a food were relatively new in town. What we were tasting was the future, if only in small bites. At the bottom of the hill, if you turn right, you get to the cemetery, where my grandparents, my great aunts, and my father, at the end of 1955, are all buried. When I was 7, I remember someone's funeral, and us jumping around the graves on the cool lawn that was green and shaved, like nothing else in the desert, running through 100 lives with our feet. I know this place well, with its marble apse and grass hair. I know everyone here. There's the VFW on top of the hill to the right, and on the left, you can see the inn on a hill in the distance. You drive by the library, which people sometimes still call the New Library, though it was built in the 60s. Its architecture strikes a fine and stable balance between the USS Arizona Memorial in Pearl Harbor and Atilde, the little mark that goes over in Enya in the Spanish so many of us spoke. Though I think the Tilde image was more mine than the architect's. Regardless, the effect was dramatic. Mrs. Ashby worked in that library so long that it was like her house, and it's where I read every science fiction book ever written. Science fiction was my life for a while. It's not that I loved science fiction, but I loved what it showed me. How there was so much out there. Sometimes as a teenager, that's a hard thing to see. Robert Heinlein was my cruise director on this ship, and Isaac Asimov and Andre Norton were its crew. I found out many years later that Andre Norton was a woman, and I was glad. I don't know if it would have changed anything to know that then, that I was reading a book by a girl. But who knows? And Tom Corbett, Space Cadet. Now here was a guy. With Roger Manning and Astro to help out, what could not be conquered? Right in this area, you can still see the uncovered parts of the Nogales Wash, which everyone calls the Arroyo. It's a hard thing to look at these days. Closer toward Valle Verde, I used to play in this same wash. It was my river. But it's not for playing anymore. I've grown up. We've all grown up. The century itself has grown up. Though there are chemicals in the water, some people have to live in the wash now, even kids. The kids, all of them Mexican and trying to find a place in this country, crossing the border underground through the tunnels, come up out of there sometimes and get in the news for harassing tourists. They ask for money or take a purse and then run back down under the covered parts, where nobody else will go. When this started happening, people in town started calling these youngsters tunnel rats and worse, even the newspapers. Standing in between the signs for Jesse's Meats and Maytorena's car wash, the Arroyo cement walls are steep and sudden, but looking in that direction, you see nothing. It's a trick of the landscape. This thing of not seeing the Arroyo at first is our version of what happens when you walk toward the Vietnam Wall from the high side of the park and how you don't see anything. Then suddenly it's there, and instead of not being able to see it, seeing it is all you can do. I have seen the wall myself, the way, like cutting onions, it brings water out of nowhere. This place, this Arroyo, does that too, with flash floods and a roaring echo of some kind of war that forces children to live in there. The Nogales Wash, the way it looks around here, you have to walk up to it if you want to see anything. It's where, when we were younger, we used to dream about things, but nobody wants to look down there anymore. And of course, we've also got the border wall, which gets all the attention anyway. Bearing rights, being careful not to drive straight into what used to be Garrett Ray's Curious Shop, is the high school, which isn't the high school anymore. It was built out of limestone and wood in about 1912, when Arizona became a state. The houses built originally on the American side were often built from these same limestone blocks dug from a nearby quarry. They're still standing, and there is still a quarry street. The old courthouse, built around the turn of the century, was also built out of this limestone block, and was for many years, along with the Catholic Church and the high school, a tremendously imposing structure. This place in front of you might not be a high school anymore, but it's like the minutes being hours and the miles being kilometers. This is Nogales High School, no matter what the signs say on it now. Just past this, past Walnut Street, where my grandmother lived, is the large Catholic church on a steep hill. Standing up there, You can see the steps to the high school, the steps to the courthouse. There were big things, big steps, steps that counted, steps that took some energy. There were back entrances, of course, but it's the steps one remembers. Right behind the church is Rodriguez Street, where we lived before moving out to Valle Verde. Then there are some stores leading up to the border. Most of Nogales was built in this pass between these hills, which soon themselves grew houses on them made of things besides limestone. The houses on the Mexican side were made from whatever was available, scrap lumber, sometimes with cement foundations. The colors they were painted, the particular blues and pinks, don't exist on this side of the border. At least, not as house paint. If you turn left, instead of crossing the border, you find the town park and the old stores, the S.H. Cress, Woolworths, Newberry's, and so on. All on Morley Avenue. All the businesses end at the courthouse, where my father worked for years, and which was followed by the post office. Morley Avenue was the street that had its own guards and border crossing gate, called the Garita. That was used mostly by locals. It stopped being a car crossing a long time ago, so travelers didn't come this way often. That meant the guards, who were sometimes Mexican, sometimes American, or sometimes both, I'm not sure it mattered very much, didn't have to put on so much of a show for the tourists, especially since they were all cramped together in that same little guardhouse with no aircon. The guards here weighed more, were closer to retirement, were more friendly and wore their ties loose, and they knew us all by our families. The smaller crossing point is where the two towns used to open up the gates and let parades and people all come through. Cinco de Mayo, 4th of July, celebrations were celebrations and belonged to everybody, at least on those days. There was a raised, covered bandstand in the park on the Arizona side, and that's where the mayors all gave their speeches. The town was founded in the later 1800s as a railroad stop, a station, however impractical in real terms, between two countries. Except for the imaginary boundary line, there wasn't any particular reason to stop in this place. People made up every reason to stop here, however, and that sensibility persists to this day. The place did have a spring, though, and people along the old trade route through here had stopped for the water. This place was called the Cañón de los Nogales, or the Canyon of the Walnut Trees. The town was called Isaacson for a while after the establishment of a post office in 1882, but the name was short-lived, and the town went back, as it always had, to calling itself Nogales. The park of the mayor's giving speeches has a small stone memorial remembering its other name. My uncle is the mayor now, but I don't think this park is where mayors go so much anymore. The pond had huge goldfish, and everybody bought popcorn at Cress's to feed them. As a child, it was a wonderful exchange. The fish sometimes made bubbles that came out of their mouths, while the popcorn in the water looked like bubbles going into them. Water and the lack of it is a funny thing in this place. Nogales exists as the southernmost town of the 1854 Gadsden Purchase, though it should not have been. In what appears to make sense of why so much of Arizona settled the way it did, some early accounts of that transaction with Mexico supposed the United States to be purchasing a piece of property that included access to the Sea of Cortez. But surveyors got it wrong. The real boundaries finally took so long to figure out that the papers were signed before the survey was completed the next year, and the missing port by that time was a moot issue. The issue of a water port was never resolved, and the lack of water remains a problem to this day. From time to time, however, students at the state's universities come up with thesis projects that propose a plan to dredge a canal from the sea to Tucson or Phoenix. It has always been an interesting idea, and one that has worked in other cities, but by now, at the end of this century, with not a pick or a shovel in sight, the point is relatively lost. Water is still a hot topic for discussion, but not much more. The firmness of the border then has often been at least a little bit suspect. It has always been, and still is, fluid. Not so long ago, when the parades just went right through the gate, it was between hearts as much as between countries. All the drum and bugle corps and the floats and the veterans, both Mexican and American. The fence couldn't stop the sound of the drums, which are still loud even now that, for governmental security reasons, for showing the world that nobody can get across the border. For all kinds of reasons, the crossing parades have been stopped. But anyone who was there remembers, and that memory is big in the hearts. With the fence, the wall, stops anyway is uncertain. If the parades don't come through anymore, the music still does. The fence doesn't stop that very well. There were the parades across the border, but there was the getting ready for the parades as well, which was just as important. You wanted to make a good impression because everybody would know you. This was the town looking at itself. I remember one woman making paper flowers to sell with different herbs for stems or decoration. She made them so fast and so many, and each one different from the one before, that as I watched, her first few zinnias became quickly enough a few hundred and grew in their happiness to the size of sunflowers. The sunflowers themselves grew to the size of pumpkins, the snapdragons grew ominous, and the rosemary fragrant. On the far side of that governmental checkpoint, crossing just barely over into Mexico, was a magical, shadowy street. On the one side was La Caverna, the cave, which was a restaurant built from what had once been a jail carved out of the side of the hill. It once held Geronimo, the Apache. But the restaurant, which was white linen fancy, became more famous in later years for its turtle soup. My father, for many years involved in law enforcement, often pertaining to drug cases, was once almost killed on this street after having dinner. On the other side from the restaurant was a barber shop called The Three Pigs, taken from the fairy tale. But the three barbers looked like the pigs that were drawn on the wall, at least to me. They were rather rotund men and quite pleasant. My Aunt Norma took me there for my first haircut, and I went with my father for many years after. I still have a lock of hair from that first time. Next to this, there was a couple of bars, the Rec Rio and the Petique. I used to love when my father took me in there because they always gave me a bowl of shelled and salted peanuts. But the whole way into town, you see the border wall. It used to be a chain link fence, but it's an iron wall now, made of what looks like cast iron sections with little windows. Actually, it used to be an idea first, and then a fence, and then a wall. I guess it still is an idea. The physical border with its tremendous fence, now wall, has been elevated into something almost geologic, looking something like a pathetic version of the Great Wall of China, which is reportedly visible from space. But this structure is something else. What we are seeing is a social geography. And while the fence's height may put scaling it out of reach, this only makes the fence all the more visible and present. It is a neat fence along somebody's huge yard, or it's a bad scarring on the land, a badly healed appendix incision. Maybe there is something of both those things. The trouble is, we talk about the border at Nogales as a place only, instead of an idea as well. But it is both where two countries meet, as well as how two countries meet. And the handshake is rough. The fence at Nogales is no longer a fence. The large wire mesh sections have all been replaced by scrap iron panels. There isn't much to say about this that the iron wall doesn't say for itself. There was some humor at first when the transition in the fence was taking place. People learned to push on a particular iron panel hard enough and with enough people to make the thing fall over. As it fell, it traversed a small canal that ran along the border and served for a few days as a perfectly good bridge. But this didn't last. Crossing the border legally for visiting is easy enough, though the big, new border crossing building looks imposing and confusing. The structure has been rebuilt several times in my life, and this most recent manifestation doesn't look too different. This new building does the same job. It's hard sometimes to drive across the line. That's where we call going across the border, and some people prefer to walk. There are plenty of parking lots on the American side willing to help out. With so many people parking, however, it suddenly seems like there are so many more people at the border. But it's like the minutes into hours and miles into kilometers and the high school not being a high school. What you are seeing simply is all the people coming out of their cars. And while you may see only one car on the highway, there may be six people in it. One becomes six just like that, all around the border. There was a further extension of this trick, making the town magical in this way. On the American side, as I was growing up, the town's population held steady into the 1970s, at about 8,000 inhabitants. But on any given day, 40,000 people were passing through, as tourists, as workers, as people shopping from the Mexican side. On any given day, then, the real population of this town was 48,000, but the 48,000-person town never existed on any census. This was the secret of Nogales. Going across the border into Mexico, one immediately turns right and heads for the Avenida Obregón. There are curious shops every single step of the way, with goods placed anywhere they can. Shop workers entice you with every manner of phrase, and in some forms of any language you'd like, so that it sometimes sounds like something from the beginning of a cabaret, with a ready willkommen and bienvenue, and of course, welcome, come on in. Tourists come from all over the world to shop here, and to step, if only briefly, into Mexico. The windows are filled with onyx chessboards and leather vests, with woven blankets and fine guayabera shirts, brightly painted tinware, and talavera pottery. Guayaberas are formal but common-sense shirts often worn instead of a suit and tie in Mexico, and they seem like a cross between an African dashiki, though not nearly as brightly colored, and a pastel, non-frilly tuxedo shirt. They're usually in easy colors, but in white, they're often wedding shirts. Gabriel Garcia Marquez wore one when he accepted the Nobel Prize. As kids, when we got dressed up for church or for parties, things like that, our parents and our relatives always made us get dressed up in things like guayaberas, and we didn't look like ourselves. But that was all right. It was a way for the people inside us to come out, if just for a moment. "You look like your grandfather," someone would say. Even though he was dead before I was born, it was a small and good way to meet him. Growing up, it was hard to value all this stuff in these stories, because for every one thing, there were 20 just like it on the shelf. But now that these things are in my house and out in the world by themselves, I am in love with what I once laughed at. There's more than goods, though. In Nogales, we're famous for our bargains, but the bargain was never in buying something cheaply. It was in all of us buying things together. And the smell here is different, both good and bad. You smell the cars too much, but you smell the restaurants too. And the wood smoke from houses sometimes reaches out for you, offering menudo or just made tortillas. Some people beg in the streets or try to sell trinkets for more than the stores. You buy them anyway. There is poverty here, but next to the border, it's badly disguised with so much weathered crepe paper and forced laughter. The performance is for tourists, but it's not always hollow. If there is laughter, though, it is aimed at life and not at anything funny. My father was once selling watches on this street. It's hard to see the real life under this show, but it's there. One need stay the only minute or two longer that stopping takes, and looking up instead of down or left instead of right, there it is. People shopped for food at the supermarkets on the Arizona side and at the Mercado on the Sonora side. But these were just part of how to eat. There was more to learn. The landscape was there too, and offered itself just as readily. Bellotas, which were acorns from the scrubby oak trees, the milk seeds from the devil's claw brambles, mountain onions, prickly pear fruits, which were called tunas, the green stuff that grew in our front lawn as part of the grass, verdolagas, which I found out many years later was called purslane in this country, and many more. And we always heard you could get water out of a barrel cactus, though we never really tried it. What we did know for certain was that all the barrel cactuses lean south-southwest. And there was a music, a sound, a nature store as well, just as rich as the parrots and the crowds in the mercado. Dry mesquite pods, for example, which could also be chewed when hit by raindrops at the beginning of a desert rain, made a sound like maracas, and played a rhythm those of us who heard it would never forget. You had to leave the central parts of the town to find these things, though. Turning left on Obregón, you're heading south once again. You pass through the first phalanx of stores only to encounter even more, but they begin to give way, if only slightly. You go by a movie house and a bakery where you are likely to stop. The smells work better than any other shopkeeper's words. You go by the Chinese restaurant, which was called Ken Wa's, but which now has a new name. You don't see them from here, but you can tell there are factories present today. As you begin to go further, you can glimpse the riverbed, which becomes the Nogales Wash on the American side, and maybe parts of the shanty towns that are springing up in service to the factories. The wage is very low, but higher than people can get farther south. This is what people say, and it may be true. The factories are American companies that set up along the border and take advantage of the lax regulations. Environmental, bureaucratic, social. This is called the maquiladora, or factory phenomenon, and who knows if it is responsible for Nogales on the American side having the highest rate of lupus in the world, and an inordinate number of cancer clusters. That the air and the water go north, that these have an effect on people. I would only be guessing. But I have three aunts with lupus and a cousin with bone cancer. As you start to drive outward from the center of town, things thin out. And as you pass two very different statues right next to each other, the first is of Benito Juarez, the first president of Mexico, dressed in Spanish-style clothing symbolic of Mexico's mestizo, or mixed, culture. Right behind him, the second statue is much larger and is of an indigenous Indian, representing Mexico's past. This curious irony, however, is that Benito Juarez himself was a full-blooded Zapotec Indian, and not mestizo by race at all. The irony is immediately lost, though, as the larger statue of the representative Indian makes everyone immediately giggle, because he is naked, very naked. The local adults laugh harder than the children, however, because Benito Juarez is pointing toward Canal Street, which is where the prostitutes live. Prostitution is legal, though controlled in Mexico. There are regular doctor visits and so on. Canal Street has been, since I can remember, a popular tourist destination, if only in the imagination. When we were in high school, we used to use the code word LANAC, which meant canal, backward. We never really said anything about the place because the moment we said its name, frontward or backward, we all started snickering. I had seen Canal Street for myself, however, and I knew the names and colors of its places. La Conga, with its old green neon and mache palms, with the whistling women at the top of its stairs, sitting where we almost could see them, where they almost weren't shadows. My father drove our whole family through there many times, on one errand or another. I don't know why, but it wasn't ominous. He simply knew people on this street. There were maybe 10 places like this along the narrow lane, which was rocky and unpaved. Day and night, the street had an eerie shine because of the neon, which was always lit up and reflected in the hoods of the cars that went through. Across the street from the statues was a restaurant, where we always stopped for pozole, a pork soup with corn and red chile. You ate this with corn tortillas, not flour. This was one of the rules. A little farther out, you reach the perimeter, which is an official checkpoint, different from the border crossing. You can cross into Nogales, Mexico, without papers, but to go farther into Mexico, it's at this checkpoint where you present your papers, paying some mordida, some graft, for one small thing or another, even though it has always been officially illegal, was common. It was like giving the official a tip. This, I understand, with the new president, has all ended now. From here, the road leads to Imuris, and then Hermosillo. In the late fall, people would walk the entire distance of 60 miles from Nogales to Magdalena, some of them the whole way on their knees. They were fulfilling promises, or mandas, they had made to St. Francis. I have seen these pilgrims many times along the road. You don't offer anyone a ride, no matter how well you know them, not even family members. Driving backward from Nogales, Mexico, into the United States, you see everything differently. It's like any hike along any trail. You see the other side of everything. This was a town that's always had one hospital, one church, one high school. They're opening up seconds now, and the old things are going. There's no news in this, of course. Nothing much that interests the newspapers. But driving it backward in time and place, I see it. And I see as well what I did not always see the first time.